You're listening to WPVC LP Charlottesville. Up right now, it's a WPVC election special with Democratic candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives from Virginia's 5th Congressional District, Leslie Coburn, in the studio with WPVC Special Events Coordinator Bob McAdams and WPVC General Manager Jeff Leonard. Now, here are your hosts for this morning's election special.
With us in the studio this morning is Democratic candidate for Congress, Leslie Coburn. Leslie, welcome back to WPVC.
Thank you.
Leslie, let's start the interview with a little background information. Where were you born and what was your life like as you grew up?
I grew up in a very happy family in a small town in the San Francisco Bay Area called Hillsborough. I was born in next door San Mateo because our town was so small we didn't even have a hospital. I had a very happy childhood, and I was the youngest of three, and decided when I was in high school that I really wanted to go east to college, and Yale was starting to take women. So I applied and got in, and the rest is history.
Well, excellent. So how has your education and working career prepared you to serve as a member of Congress?
Well, I was lucky to have a great education, but more importantly, I think I got a better education when I started working. I began working as a journalist kind of by accident. I was doing graduate work in London, and I went over to NBC News to see if they might have a job available in the future. And I met with the bureau chief, who happened to be redecorating his office, so he had no furniture. And we sat on the floor, got along extremely well, and he then told me that he would offer me a job, but I had to take it right away, that I would have to work and finish my graduate degree at the same time, which I did, which was a little like being on the campaign trail. It was very chaotic. And I learned in that office everything I could about radio, television, about being a reporter. And I was sent to some remarkable places as a very young journalist. I got to go to Africa. I got to go to Libya. I met with Gaddafi. I got to travel through West Africa. So I had some extraordinary experience before then moving to 60 Minutes over there and traveled the world with them. And then I moved back to New York and continued at CBS, where I then was a producer at CBS Reports and then moved on to be a correspondent at Frontline and also worked at ABC News and then back to 60 Minutes again. So I had a very full career, 35 years of investigative journalism. I covered six wars, including Iraq and Afghanistan several times, and Somalia, Colombia, Cambodia, Central America. So it was a very full career, lots of awards, and I thought at the end of it that I would go back to our farm in Rappahannock County and think about farming and gardening, which I love, which was kind of the opposite of the crazy life I led overseas. But then Donald Trump came into office, and my life changed dramatically.
Yeah, that can't be glamorous travel, traveling around to war zones and all over to the hot spots of the world. You know, when people think of travel worldwide, I can't imagine sort of the some of the situations you were placed in.
It was definitely not glamorous. You're often sleeping wherever you can. You're in a tent. You're on someone's floor. You might be in a bunker someplace. There, you have to be willing to rough it in any condition. Certainly when you're in a place like Somalia, for example, I was there for a month before U.S. forces went into Somalia, so it was one of the most dangerous places in the world, and you would take whatever conditions you could get for sleeping and surviving.
Your water and hot water was a luxury for sure, and Somalia is still one of the most dangerous places in the world from what I understand.
It is.
Oh, my gosh. All right, Bob.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, for this interview, we have a great job description. It's called the Constitution of the United States. The preamble of the Constitution begins by establishing the source of government's authority as we the people. What should Congress do to bring more people into the process? How can Congress make participation and voting easier?
Well, there's some simple things that should be done. One is that when you go to get a driver's license, you should automatically be registered. Second, it would be nice if we could vote on a Saturday or make voting day a holiday, rather than people having to fit it into their busy day before they take the kids to school or after they get home from work. Why not make it a leisurely, fun thing to do? In fact, in the early days of this country, people loved going to vote because it was often you'd go to a tavern. So it was a party. People associated that with a celebration. And I think we should get back to that. I think it would be good.
The preamble continues with an outline of the purposes of government. The first of these is to form a more perfect union. When you look at the deep divisions in our country, what do you see as the most difficult divisions? What are the causes, and what should be done by our leaders to ease those divisions?
Well, one division I see that I think is a real problem is serious income disparity. And this has to do with wage stagnation. It has to do with the fact that some people have done very, very well since the end of the Great Recession. And some people have really experienced stagnant wages. They're still having to work 2, 3, sometimes even 4 jobs. And they really, what we're seeing in a way is two nations at the same time. One is the beneficiary of a supposedly good economy and the stock market going up and everything looks rosy. And another for whom they're facing huge student loans. They aren't earning enough right now in Virginia. The minimum wage is still $1.50 less than West Virginia. It's not a living wage. And I think until these things are addressed, this terrible income disparity, we cannot have a more perfect union. And there are other things as well. I think since when Trump came into office, he opened a Pandora's box where it was okay to express racist feelings. And we certainly saw it here in Charlottesville a year ago. That is a problem because in many ways, we're going right back to a dark time when racism was overt, and I think that we have to deal with this. This has to stop. I was with an extraordinary woman who was one of the children who walked out of the Moton High School in 1951 at age 12. Joy speaks. And she said, you know, it was a long time ago, 1951, when this troop of African-American children walked out of that high school because the conditions were so bad that, for example, they were having class in tar paper shacks where the roof leaked and they had to carry umbrellas over their desks so their papers wouldn't be destroyed. So, but she said, you know, it was a long time ago and we made huge gains, but I see it again. I see this racism again. So I think these are wounds that have to be, we have to address them, face them and address them. And I would suggest that at a congressional level, you can do that with thinking about institutional racism. Where do we see it and how do we solve it? The other thing I'm seeing, the other division that I'm very concerned about is with our immigrants. What happened on the border with the children being separated from their parents was absolutely appalling. It was one of the worst things that has happened in this country in my lifetime. The fact that that was somehow okay, that it was allowed, that it was sanctioned, is really beyond the pale for me. And I think I think the Republicans, led by the White House, have demonized the immigrant population. And by doing that, calling them criminals, talking about an infestation of immigrants coming into this country, this is all very bad. When you demonize one group of people like that and you separate them out and it's okay to attack them, I think that we are really heading away from a perfect union. So we need to restore and repair all these things.
And then we need to restore amongst ourselves. We need to restore our image on a world stage. I think we've suffered greatly in that area also. Would you agree?
I agree. I think that our allies are very concerned about what's happening in Washington. Relationships that they thought were very stable are not stable anymore, like our European allies. And they were shocked by a couple of things. One, the U.S. pulling out of the Paris Accord. Two, the U.S. pulling out of the Iran deal. Both of those involve a great many allies. And suddenly, we weren't part of the mix. What the Trump administration doesn't realize or doesn't fully appreciate or doesn't care about is that that's really taking the U.S. out of a leadership role on the world stage because our allies can't depend on us.
Yeah, China's taking a foothold in Africa, you know, for resources, and we're just sitting over here trying to isolate ourselves, and that's in at least in my opinion, that's awful. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is the great Leslie Coburn. Leslie, maybe not great, but trying to be. Leslie, the preamble includes, as purposes for government, establishing justice and ensuring domestic tranquility. I kind of want to sing the song from Schoolhouse Rock when I say that. The 14th Amendment guarantees equal protection under the law for every person. Statistics show that the experiences of people of color speak clearly, and the experiences of people of color speak clearly, that the reality is far from equal. What injustices do you see in our justice system, and what should Congress do to fix them?
Well, we have some great injustices in our justice system, and one of them is that if you're an African-American male, you are 10 times more likely to be thrown in jail for drugs than if you're white. 10 times. This is something that needs to be addressed, and it can be addressed in different ways. One, we need to really think about some big changes on marijuana legislation. We need to decriminalize. And by doing that, we can really, right now we have 30% of our prison population are in jail for drug crimes. They shouldn't be there. They shouldn't be there. They belong in treatment. They belong in drug courts. They don't belong in a prison system that now has 2.2 million people in it, which is unprecedented in the world. No other country has anything like it. So I think that's one thing. And injustices in, for example, school-to-prison pipeline, which I care very deeply about because I think that kids are really falling through the cracks for specific reasons. And I've been talking to many, many teachers about this. Why does it happen? Clearly, in the school systems, counselors are having to deal with so much bureaucracy, they don't have enough time for the kids. We have a narrow definition of special education, which should be broadened so that more people can be included. And I think that we need more attention. The teachers and the school system have the money so that we have people specifically there to liaise with parents, with families, so that we don't have this situation where a young child heads toward the juvenile justice system rather than, to the principal's office to suffer for an afternoon. I mean, that's what used to happen. And now kids are heading into jail, and Virginia is one of the worst states for this. So that's something we really need to pay attention to. Not to mention others. For example, if you're an African-American woman, you are very likely to not only not get equal pay, but really not get equal pay. You know, as a woman in the workplace for my entire career, I was always struggling for equal pay. But had I been black, it would have been much more difficult. And what that means is that older women, once they start relying on Social Security, they are getting less. And we have a lot of serious poverty among older African-American women.
You know, violence, especially gun violence, has shattered our domestic tranquility in one community after another. What actions should Congress take to address gun violence across the nation other than sending thoughts and prayers?
Well, I loved that when the Parkland students said, no more thoughts and prayers. It was a great thing. It was very distressing that after every massacre, it was just more and more prayers. And I was very impressed with the Parkland students. I did get the opportunity to see them when they were here in Charlottesville. And I said to them, I'm so pleased that you're taking the lead on this. But I think that with gun violence, there are several things that can be done. First of all, in Virginia, among Democrats as well as Republicans, there are many, many gun owners. I mean, almost, you know, huge numbers of Democrats who I come across in the 5th District own guns, men and women. But they are all in agreement on certain things. Gun show loopholes, online loopholes for purchases, domestic violence. This one is I'm particularly concerned about. If you're guilty of domestic violence, you should not have a gun. There are several loopholes in that area. One is called the boyfriend loophole. So that if you're a boyfriend rather than a spouse and you have a restraining order, you can get away with having a gun when you shouldn't. So we need to fix those loopholes and make sure that even people with a temporary restraining order should not be carrying a weapon. And I think that gun owners also agree on bump stocks, these large capacity magazines, which I find police departments are very concerned about because they're the ones who have to face them. And suddenly they're outgunned. Also, there is the 2018 assault weapons ban, which is very much like the one that we had in place between 1994 and 2004. I think that should go back into law. I think we would all be better off because in that 10-year period, it really did help to keep the massacres down.
You can see the statistics after the assault weapons ban was lifted. These mass shootings increased, and I don't think there can be any doubt that there's a direct correlation.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams, and with us in the studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, one of the roles of government is to provide for the common defense. Congress has the sole authority to declare war, not the president. If elected, what will you do to make sure that every use of our armed forces is authorized by Congress only for our common defense?
Well, I feel very strongly about this. Congress should declare war, and it's right there in the Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 8. Congress shall declare war. Right now, because of the terrible events in 2001, after 9/11, the president was given blanket authority to go after al-Qaeda and others. It is what preceded the war in Afghanistan, which has now gone on for 17 years. With little result. But I think that has to change now because that authority has now been translated into authority to wage endless war all over the world without Congress being able to really look at what these wars mean, what they are, and making the decision. Because Congress, has to respond to voters. So it's a much closer association. That's why it's in the Constitution that it should be Congress that declares war.
Now, during the past 18 months, people have become more fearful of war, including nuclear war. What steps should Congress take to prevent an erratic president from unilaterally using nuclear weapons in a first strike?
Well, I think that, first of all, presidents shouldn't make these unilateral decisions. And that we need to amend our national command authority so that you have more than one person. I mean, let's face it, it's a little nervous-making what's going on right now, and given who's in the White House and who has control over nuclear weapons. You can make a decision about whether perhaps get the chairman of the Joint Chiefs involved, SAC commander, Secretary of Defense, so long as there's another voice. It's really important. Actually, I've been covering stories about nuclear wars, about nuclear war for many years. And early in the 1980s, I was working on a huge project for CBS News, where we discovered that submarines could launch nuclear weapons on their own. So talk about terrifying. Fortunately, it did not happen. But I really think we need to take a close look at nuclear controls.
It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to 94.7 WPVC's Election Special with our guest Leslie Coburn. We'll be right back to discuss the big topic of the role of government. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams a 94.7 WPVC Election Special job interview with congressional candidate Leslie Coburn. Bob and Leslie, we're talking about the role of government as described in the Constitution.
And we've reached a really big one. Promote the general welfare. With this goal, the framers set the role of government as providing a foundation on which every private enterprise is built. Nothing speaks more to the general welfare than the health of the American people. Do you believe, Leslie, that health care is a right? And if so, how will you make it a reality? If not, what happens to the people who cannot afford health insurance or medical care?
Well, I do believe it's a right. And I will fight hard on this one. I find that in the 5th District of Virginia, the tippy-top issue absolutely is health care. Every aspect of health care, whether it's, you know, we've had a crisis in Charlottesville of having a monopoly, one insurance company, which was charging on the individual market with a family of four, you could pay $36,000 a year with a $12,000 deductible. Who is going to pay that? That came about because the Trump administration pulled out the legs from under the insurance companies with the Affordable Care Act and stopped subsidizing them. By doing that and stopping the individual mandate, the whole system is now, it's been sabotaged. So this has to be reversed. First of all, it has to be reversed. Second of all, I think that what we need to do is, let me just say first that there are some things that are really astonishing going on in Washington. One, the Trump administration says, and this takes us back to the Constitution, they say it is unconstitutional to guarantee health care for people with pre-existing conditions. Now, remember, before the Affordable Care Act, there were a lot of people who could not ever get insurance because of their pre-existing conditions. So we would be right back there again if this goes forward, and they are determined to do it. So that's very dangerous. Plus, right now in the House of Representatives, they are saying to pay for this massive tax bill where they gave $1.9 trillion to corporations and to the wealthy. To pay for that, they want to cut $500 billion from Medicare, $1.5 trillion from Medicaid, and $4 trillion from Social Security. This is really unacceptable. So yes, I think healthcare is a right. Yes, let's restore the Affordable Care Act. Let's not jeopardize at all the ability for people with pre-existing conditions to get healthcare. Then let's move further. Let's say that we put Medicare on the exchange so that you, anyone, can buy into the Medicare system no matter how old you are. Lots of people will do that because it's going to be cheaper, because there's much less overhead. It's 2 to 3% versus insurance companies, which have overhead of 19 to 25%. So it will be cheaper, it will be attractive, and you're going to get a lot of people moving into the Medicare system. And then I support Medicare for all. And that means that we completely revamp our system, which now is the most expensive in the world. We pay twice as much as any other industrialized country for health care. And yet everyone, all the other countries have guaranteed health care for everyone.
You know, on Thursday night, you had a debate with Mr. Riggleman, who we've invited to come sit with us, and we have not heard back a confirmation yet. But he mentioned that he supported bipartisan care, and I had never heard of bipartisan care, and I'm not sure what it is. Do you have any idea what bipartisan care is?
I'm not sure what he was talking about. I do know in a previous debate, he did say that he wanted to repeal the Affordable Care Act. Mr. Riegelman wants to join the Freedom Caucus. He has pledged to do that. And the Freedom Caucus, as we know, were in the forefront of those who wanted to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, which takes health care away from 23 million people in this country.
Now, we have a question from a listener in Charlottesville about another important issue, the economy. In America, the richest country in history, the top 1% own most of the wealth, while more than 45 million Americans are living below the poverty line. Good jobs are being automated and people replaced by machines and computers at the same time that corporations are earning record profits. How do you define the problems with the economy and what should Congress do about it?
Well, I think we touched on this at the beginning with stagnant wages. In the 5th District, it isn't so much that people are being replaced by robots, but what you are seeing is people are not making enough money. So I support collective bargaining. I think that the decline of unions in this country has been very bad for people who are hoping to move from the working class to the middle class. That was really a vehicle for people to do that. So I think that we need collective bargaining in order for people to earn more. We need people to earn more in order to have a more equitable society.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is Leslie Coburn. Now, Leslie, we touched on this also a while ago, but I'll give you a chance to expand. You know, much of our general welfare depends on how we educate our children. How can Congress help every young person reach their potential without the burden of massive student debt?
Student debt is one of the biggest problems we face because we have a whole generation now. It's actually now coming to two generations who are basically in debt slavery. In Virginia, the average debt when you come out of college is $30,000. For people at Averitt, for example, it's $35,000. That's a heavy, heavy burden, and some people have much more. Right now, there are bills on the table in Congress that if we get enough Democrats up there, can be signed. One simply says that if you're paying a high interest rate with your student debt, you should be able to reduce it to whatever the lowest interest rate is that's being offered today. That's a very important change for a lot of people who are carrying this heavy debt. Also, you should be able to discharge this debt as you can with your other debts with bankruptcy. Right now, you can't. And that affects not only students, but their grandparents who have often co-signed those loans. So we need to make sure that you can do that as well. And the other thing is the Obama administration was very concerned about educational institutions who were defrauding students. They had tens of thousands of cases on the desks at the Department of Education where students had actually been defrauded by online universities. The Trump administration is really trying to reverse all of those controls on those kinds of institutions. Right now, there's a bill, a Republican bill called the PROSPER Act, which would cut student aid by about $15 billion and loosen the rules for online universities, which it really should be the opposite. We need more student aid. We need reduced interest rates for student loans, and we need tighter controls of those universities that have defrauded students.
So it's almost like they're turning over our children's student debt to payday lenders, and all you're asking for is to be able to for them to do what you can do with your house is renegotiate its debt to the lowest possible interest rate. Makes sense to me. Oh, another issue that is affecting young people is the environment. A listener in Charlottesville submitted this question. The earth is warming. Ice caps are melting. Sea levels rising. We're getting unprecedented tropical storms, if you just look outside last week. Floods and extreme heat. Climate change is happening to us daily, and the future looks worse. What should Congress do to speed up the transition from fossil fuels to renewables?
Well, I have a strong environmental background. I was endorsed by the League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club and Oceans Pack, which thinks all day and all night about climate change. I think that a number of things should be done. First of all, we need to jump back into the Paris Climate Accords, because this is, we need to have worldwide cooperation. And right now, the United States is the only country who is not cooperating with that. Fortunately, in this country, there are businesses and states who have decided on their own to cooperate with the whole Paris group, even if the United States as a government is not doing that. I think that in the 5th District, for example, we've got a big issue right here at home. We have two frack gas pipelines that are coming through our district. They will, methane leaks from pipelines. Methane is 25 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than CO2. So the methane that will be leaked from those pipelines is the greenhouse gas equivalent of 46 coal fire plants. How can we let this happen? This should be reversed simply on the grounds of climate change.
You know, I don't think there's consensus in Richmond, Democrat or Republican, about the pipelines there are being built. Are you? What's your position on the current pipeline that's going right at the foot of Wintergreen?
The Atlantic Coast Pipeline is an unnecessary pipeline. And to take a pipeline like that and put it through an area where you've had hugely successful tourist businesses, you have cideries, breweries, you have Wintergreen, you have wedding venues, creates so many jobs for Nelson County. And why would you jeopardize any of that for the sake of a pipeline that is not keeping the lights on in Virginia? Also, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline goes through Union Hill. The plan is that it will go into Union Hill, which is a historic freedman community in Buckingham County. Union Hill will have about 99 households, will have a huge compressor station right in the middle of it that links the pipeline together. That compressor station, you will have methane being vented. You'll have dozens of toxic chemicals that will go into the air, polluting that whole area. And it will sound like several diesel locomotives 24/7. So you are really destroying a community, and I see no reason for that. And I think it's, I went to a hearing the other day in Buckingham about this, and I said to them, I will take this with me to Congress, and I will not let it rest. The idea that you would do that to an important community like this is completely appalling to me.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Bob McAdams. Leslie, in Article 1, Section 8, the Constitution gives power to Congress to set uniform rules for naturalization of new citizens. Throughout our history, immigration has renewed our nation over and over again. The current administration is blocking migrants, even asylum seekers protected by treaty and law, from entering. They're blocking them from entering our country. They have separated children from their families. What are your views on immigration, and what should Congress do about immigration now?
My views are that asylum seekers should be treated with dignity and respect. And the idea that you would ever separate families is really quite beyond my comprehension. I think that this is a human rights crime that will define this administration for a very, very long time to come. You know, we've made mistakes before in this country, Japanese internment camps, for example. Those mistakes don't go away easily. And what is happening now with these children, remember, there's still hundreds of children who are separated from their parents. And in fact, overall, because you've had children come on their own to this country, you have probably 13,000 children who are now in prison here. So this has to stop. I think that I would do everything possible to reverse this.
Section 8 also gives Congress the responsibility of post offices and postal roads. These are the 18th century equivalent of communications and transportation infrastructure. The framers understood that effective infrastructure is necessary for the general welfare. What is your plan to rebuild and strengthen our nation's infrastructure? Where do you stand on privatization of public functions?
I'm not very excited about privatization of public functions, particularly when you're talking about highways, bridges, all those things that are in desperate need of repair right now. I don't think they should be privatized. I think we do need to have a major infrastructure program. Trump promised this when he was running, and it was very, very popular. He said he would do something about this, and nothing has been done. So we do need infrastructure repair. You know, I was down at Virginia Technical Institute in Alta Vista recently, and there people are trained for highly skilled infrastructure jobs. And the average age right now for people with that knowledge who can really build a bridge and build a building is 57 years old. That tells us that we need major training programs, amplifying what they're doing at VTI. We should be doing it all over the district. We should be doing it all over the country. So infrastructure, and not just physical infrastructure, but think how we have serious broadband problems in the 5th District. You have kids all over the district who have to be driven to the library parking lot to get their homework done. Now, there is a bipartisan bill on the table in the House of Representatives, H.R. 800, which would set up an office in the Department of Agriculture for broadband that would treat broadband just like rural electrification. It would make it a top priority. You would have an undersecretary there. It would be a powerful office, and I really support that. The 5th District needs, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to do anything while living out in the countryside, you need to have, you need to be able to go online. So there's infrastructure at different levels that need to be taken care of, not to mention the post office, which right now is in big trouble because the administration is saying that the post office has to have funds set aside for up to 75 years for pensions. Now, this is something that's, it's unaffordable for the post office. So we may lose our post office, and we don't want that to happen. We want the U.S. mail to carry on.
You're listening to 94.7 WPBC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard. With us in studio today is Leslie Coburn. Leslie is the father of a daughter. This is very important. Leslie, with the possible changes in the Supreme Court and the far-right Congress, a woman's right to make her own reproductive choices is being challenged, and women still are often paid less than men for doing the same job. What should Congress do to protect the rights of women?
Well, it is the law that women should have equal pay. It's been the law since the Kennedy administration, but it hasn't been enforced. So there's all kinds of legislation sitting, waiting to pass, that will push that along so that you can actually enforce it. It's critical for women. And also, women's reproductive health, as you know, is on the chopping block right now because Roe v. Wade, which is think about the constitutional issue with Roe v. Wade. It is a woman's right to privacy that a woman's reproductive health is her private matter. This is a constitutional issue. And if Kavanaugh gets in and we lose Roe v. Wade, it's going to be a very dark day for women. So my opponent, Mr. Riggleman, wants to close Planned Parenthood as soon as he gets into Congress. That's his first wish. And when I think about that, and I think about the 2.4 million women in this country who rely on Planned Parenthood for cancer screening, for contraception, for all of these really important things, and it's particularly rural women, and it's also women of color. So there are things we really need to preserve and protect in terms of women's rights.
Yeah, Planned Parenthood has become essentially the free clinic for women in a lot of areas, and that's unfortunate, is what Congress wants to do. Congress has a responsibility for writing budgets and appropriating funds, levying taxes. What would your budget and tax reform priorities be if elected?
Well, I think the tax bill that the Trump administration put through is really astonishing. You know, to add $1.9 trillion to the deficit in a giveaway to corporations who don't need it and to the wealthy, and then give a little bit of a hint of a tax relief to some Americans, not others. Others will be very surprised by their tax bills because they're going to be higher. But you know, this is giving away money to people who don't need it, corporations, and our grandchildren will pay for that. So that needs to be reversed. That would be my first priority.
Well, thanks, Leslie. Hate to interrupt this discussion. We need to take another short break. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, Progressive Voice of Charlottesville's election special interview. I'm Jeff Leonard, and I'm co-hosting with Bob McAdams at 94.7 WPVC election job special job interview with congressional candidate Leslie Coburn. Bob and Leslie, we're going to have one more segment to talk about. But first, Leslie, you wanted to finish up on your question last time about debt.
Well, I think we're seeing something else with debt, which is this. The banks, after the financial crash, were bailed out not to the tune of $800 billion, but to the tune of nearly $17 trillion, if you include what they got from the Fed. The banks got the money. People did not get the money. People who lost their homes. We now have a major crisis coming up with large pension funds who suffered in the crash and who are now going bankrupt. That will involve millions of people in this country who will not get pensions unless the government gives those pension funds loans. So the banks got a break, and the debt, you know, I mean, talk about spending like drunken sailors. The Republicans love spending money. There is another problem on the horizon, which is because we have these endless wars, which, remember, Congress is not declaring war. The president is going to war when he feels like it. Because we have these wars are, I call them credit card wars. We can't afford these wars. And right now, the debt on our endless wars, it will be just the interest is $7 trillion.
Mm. Now, we've discussed many issues, and one of them that you touched on was Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. You know, many people spend their entire Social Security deposit long before the next deposit arrives. Cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid will hurt many seniors. What steps should Congress take to protect those seniors?
I've been endorsed by the Committee to Protect Social Security and Medicare. I think that some of us see that we have to do absolutely everything we can to protect Social Security and Medicare. The problem with decisions like this administration and the Republicans in Congress who pushed through this tax bill, which will cost $1.9 trillion on the deficit, is that triggers cuts. And there is a move right now to cut $500 billion from Medicare. This is something that we must not let happen. Medicare is not an entitlement. This is something that millions of Americans have earned. We've paid in. And the idea that you would cut it in this cavalier way is absolutely ridiculous. If you want to make cuts, let's have some priorities here. Preserving Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid should be our absolute top priorities in this country. And there are other things where we have terrible waste that, you know, can be fixed. Right now, we have an Air Force plane, a transport plane, that has a toilet seat cover The cover alone costs $10,000. How about some accountability and not turning to Social Security and Medicare to cut there? Let's cut some of this fraud, waste, and abuse in other parts of the government.
On all of these issues, many of these issues, voters feel frustrated when their letters and calls have no effect, while lobbyists are writing health insurance repeal and tax bills behind closed doors. How would you change the legislative process to restore its integrity and restore public trust?
Well, I'm not taking any contributions from corporate PACs, and I think everyone should do that and follow suit. That's the place to start. I've been endorsed by End Citizens United. We have, when you talk about money in politics, if you're getting a ton of money from Big Pharma, then how can you hold their feet to the fire on drug prices? You can't. So the key is don't take the money. And the more you can spread that around and get that done in Congress, the better off we'll be.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum. I'm Jeff Leonard, and with us today in studio is Leslie Coburn. Leslie, I'm sure you know the high cost of running a political campaign. I mean, you know, money coming into campaigns is often used like a bribe to get laws enacted to benefit the donor. The joke among small business owners like myself is you know you've made it when you buy your first politician. But the Citizens United decision, unlimited dark money raises the stakes even higher. What would you do to reduce the influence of big money in politics?
Well, I would get everyone coming into Congress to agree that they shouldn't take corporate PAC money. If you do that, and it's becoming popular now, I see it happening more on the Hill. There are a few congressional candidates in Virginia who have decided not to take corporate PAC money. The more who decide not to do it, the more independence they have, and the more they can respond to their own voters. We should be responding to voters, not to corporations.
You know, the framers provided ways to amend the Constitution. So far, 27 amendments have been ratified, including the first 10 in the Bill of Rights. In today's political and social environment, which of these amendments do you see as the most under threat? What should Congress do to protect them?
Well, I certainly see the threat to the First Amendment because, you know, the free speech, the press. I think that we have a president right now who says that the press is the enemy of the people. That's a big problem because the press guarantees our democracy, whether you like the press or not. We need a free press. Otherwise, democracy doesn't function, and I've certainly seen it in my work all around the world, what it's like being in a country that has no free press. We don't want that here. So I think the First Amendment is under threat. I see other amendments that are less well known where you have right now, we are not really abiding by these laws. I'll give you an example, like the Eighth Amendment. The Eighth Amendment says excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed. Right now in the Fifth District, I see a real problem with ex-felons who come out of jail, and they've served their time, but they have all these fees slapped on them, thousands of dollars in court fees. And if you have that, you can't get a driver's license, and if you can't get a driver's license, you can't get a job, and you're in a terrible catch-22, and you end up going right back in jail. So we need to abide by the Constitution, the Eighth Amendment, and make sure that we're not charging these excessive fees. We have another one. The 14th Amendment says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Right now, we have civil forfeiture, where a police department can take something from your house or from your car before you have been charged. Now, this is a bipartisan issue on Capitol Hill to try and stop this. But I would say it's a constitutional issue. It's right there in the 14th Amendment. So there are things hidden in the Constitution that we need to pay more attention to. I mean, like, here's another one. Fifth Amendment. nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. We have that right here with the pipelines. We have an issue of eminent domain. Pipelines are crossing farmland. They're crossing businesses. And people are not offered just compensation. So I think we all need to sit down and read the Constitution to see what's in there that we really need to be paying attention to so that we can serve people better.
You're listening to 94.7 WPVC's 5th District Congressional Candidate Forum interview with Leslie Coburn. I'm Bob McAdams. Leslie, in Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution, it gives the sole power of impeachment to the House of Representatives with the Senate serving as jury. Article 2, Section 4 lists as impeachable offenses treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. What kind of evidence would you need to support impeachment of the current or any other president?
Well, I think the impeachment issue has become a very kind of hot button issue. But the way I look at it is I have read the articles of impeachment that are sitting at the Judiciary Committee in the House. They talk about obstruction of justice, foreign emoluments, domestic emoluments. There's some very significant things in those articles right now. I do feel that before anyone talks about impeaching a president, that we need to make sure that the investigations surrounding the president are completed. Don't forget, the Republicans were very, very anxious to impeach Bill Clinton. They spent a huge amount of money to do it. And look what happened in the end. It didn't happen. It didn't happen because it stalled in the Senate. So let's be very, very careful before throwing around the idea of impeachment. Make sure that we give plenty of time for the investigations to be completed.
Now, the 5th District covers an area bigger than the state of New Jersey. How is your campaign going? What are you learning from the people in the 5th?
I am learning a lot from the people of the 5th, and I have put over 70,000 miles on my car, traveling the 5th District for over, I guess it's now 16 months. What I've learned is that people are desperate for good representation. They don't feel they have it. They're very appreciative of the fact that I and also my wonderful campaign team are out there in every single county, in the 21 counties around this district. One thing we're going to do when we get into office, we're going to take the door off the office so that everyone is welcome. Right now, people do not feel welcome in our congressional office for the 5th. We need to be a real embassy for people to come, and people, everyone who comes to Washington should meet with the congressperson. That should be a given, and also we need to have town halls, lots of them. Maybe one a month, so that people can talk to the congressperson and make sure that that what's happening in that office in Washington is being responsive to what they want.
Now, if people want to get involved in your campaign, what's your website and how are you doing with volunteers?
We have nearly 4,000 volunteers, and we would love more. We have offices all over the district. So if you're near Warrenton, we have an office there. We have an office in Charlottesville. We have an office in Danville. We have an office in Halifax there. We have an office in Franklin. They're everywhere. There is always something for you to do, depending on what you're interested in. So the website is LeslieCoburnForCongress.com. Go there, and all the information is there. You can get in touch with our team, and we're very responsive to people wanting to join up, whether it's going door to door, whether it's texting, writing postcards, whatever you feel you can do, we would love to have you.
So I have one more question. You went through a rigorous primary. You had three opponents, and you were on the road forever. You came by here. We interviewed you. While your opponent, Mr. Riggleman, was sort of anointed at the last minute without having been vetted or gone through any of the primary process, are there some days that you wish you'd sort of trade positions with him and not having gone through that, or do you just cherish that time that you spent on the campaign trail?
Oh, I would never trade positions, because I think that if you do what he did and just jump in, you don't know this district, and you have to know it as much as possible before really being a good representative. How can you represent the people in Lunenburg if you never go there? How can you represent the people in Franklin unless you understand what they care about? So everything that we've done to date is a tremendous foundation for being, you know, for me and for the staff who will come to Washington to be really good representatives. I would definitely not trade places. I think that Mr. Riggleman is relying on the Republican Party and what they might, you know, what they might throw on television or whatever to support him. But that is really not the way we are running our campaign, and I don't believe that's the way to run a campaign.
Well, unfortunately, we were out of time. Leslie, thank you so much for spending an hour with us here on 94.7 WPVC with our listeners. I want to let you know we have reached out. I have reached out personally and emailed back and forth with Mr. Riggleman's campaign, and we are in negotiations, or at least I'm expecting an email back with a yes or a no. So, Mr. Riggleman, you are always welcome in our studio. We'd love to have this style interview with you, so just please drop us a line. I want to thank Leslie Coburn for giving us her time so that you, our listeners, can make the best choice on Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th.
You've been listening to a WPVC election special with Democratic candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives from Virginia's 5th Congressional District, Leslie Coburn, in the studio with WPVC Special Events Coordinator Bob McAdams and WPVC General Manager Jeff Leonard. If you missed part of the show or would like to hear it again, the program will be available as a podcast at WPVC.org and at SevillePodcast.net. Thanks for joining us, and make sure you vote November 6th.